Hi everyone, it's Adam from Monkey Tennis here. Just saying a huge thank you to all of you that have supported my charity appeal so far. For those that haven't heard about it, this September I'm going to be swimming 15 kilometres between five islands in Cornwall. I'll be swimming the Isles of Scilly, that's Scilly, S-C-I-L-L-Y. I'm doing it because I want to, but also to raise money for CALM, the campaign against living miserably. It's a well-known statistic that 125 people in the UK die by suicide every week, and CALM run a free and confidential helpline for people to speak through their problems and ultimately to help prevent suicides. I'm looking to raise enough money to train two new phone workers to man those lines, and I'll be doing it by swimming the Isles of Scilly in Cornwall. If you're looking to support me, it would be greatly appreciated. You can donate at justgiving.com. Just go there and search for Adam Swim Scilly. That's Adam Swim Scilly, S-C-I-L-L-Y. All donations greatly appreciated. Thank you for helping me to support CALM. And now, on with Monkey Tennis.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hello, Tom Stab from Team Monkey Tennis here. When producer Jed sent over this week's episode to review, we noticed that although Adam tees up that in the next episode we will be joined by a special guest, we don't actually mention who it is. Well, with Nick busy constructing a convoluted and ultimately pointless poll to decide who records this message, Adam checking Google Trends on which of the hosts is the most popular, Tom Dark busy telling anyone who will listen what rationing was like, and producer Jed presumably being interviewed by the police again, I heroically stepped up to the plate to record this and let you know that Stephen Mangan will be appearing on next week's episode as our very special guest. Stephen was absolutely amazing, telling us some hilarious and exclusive stories of what it was like playing Sir Dansworth of Moodyshire. You won't want to miss it. And now, on with this week's episode, recorded live at King's Place, London, as part of the London Podcast Festival. We hope you enjoy it.
Monkey Tennis?
Yabba dabba doo.
Sorry, I did Jimmy Savile there. Monkey Tennis?
This is Midmore Matt.
Let's do slap hands. Idiotic broth. Monkey Tennis?
Please, though!
Monkey Tennis?
You need to press transfer.
I like it. It's a clean kill. Monkey Tennis?
We will do that, definitely, yeah.
OK, does Mummy know you do this?
The time is 10:30.
What a Dilbert. Monkey Tennis?
And I know it won't smash, Lynn. Just wrap it in bubble wrap.
Hello and welcome to Monkey Tennis, the Alan Partridge fan podcast, where we are in London for the first time in front of an entirely new audience that haven't just done all of this for 45 minutes. We're going to dive into episode 6 of Mid-Morning Matters series 2, and then after that we'll be bringing out a very special guest. It opens with Billy Joel, but I should also say first, I'm Adam Brooks, and I'm joined by Tom Dark.
See you in Battersea Dogs Court.
Nick Holder.
Oh, I'm really scared.
I am a bit.
And Tom Stab.
I'd like to play your bum like the bongos.
So, yes, we open with Billy Joel, the last of this week's Billies, alongside Ocean, Idol, Ray Cyrus and Piper.
Oh, hang on though, but before we get too much further in this, I need to go through the viewing figures. They've dropped again.
Oh no!
It's down to 51,000 this week, and the original week of broadcast was 22nd of March 2016. So they've only dropped by 1,000, I think, but it's definitely on a downward slope. So okay. It's not looking good.
Back to the Billies. So Ocean, Idol, Ray Cyrus and Piper. Question to the group, any other famous musical Billies spring to mind?
Joel Armstrong.
Oh, yeah. I like it. Talent, if you're talking bands.
Billy Bragg.
Billy Jean.
She was a song.
She was a song.
And a bloody brilliant one.
Yeah, she was.
Or Billy Elliot, if you want to get a bit of dancing in there.
Okay, so what we're saying is he could have squeezed another week out of this premise. But,
yeah.
But actually, next week he's on to Bob's, Marley, Geldof, Dylan, Sega and The Builder.
So I've got a couple of questions to the group I'd like to put forward here. Going back to Biggest Billies, would anybody care to guess who is the biggest Billy on Spotify? So I'll just recap. Yep. You've got Billy Joel, you've got Billy Piper, Billy Ray Cyrus, Billy Ocean, Billy Idol.
It's Billy Joel.
It's
got to be Joel.
I can confirm it is Joel. He is at the time of writing these notes, he was the 286th most listened artist on Spotify in the world. So yeah, he's getting 8.5 million plays a month. Billy Idol is getting 3 million plays a month. Billy Ocean, 1.7 million. Billy Ray Cyrus, 890,000. Billy Piper, 51,000. Feel a bit sorry for Billy Piper, so maybe when you get home tonight, stream Honey to the Bee.
Why wouldn't you?
Yeah, exactly.
Banger.
It's on my playlist.
So the fact he's talking about next week is going to be Bob's means we must be on Friday's show here. There is a bit of a sort of end of the week feel to this episode,
yeah. Good point.
As represented by Psychic Simon's t-shirt, I think.
I mean, this is very much a slogan t-shirt low for Psychic Simon, isn't it? Also, for people listening at home, he's got a grey t-shirt on with an arrow pointing to Alan and it says, I rented this hooker. I did think that this is the sort of thing that Alan would not have let this shit fly in the past. I think this time he's probably a bit like, this is a funny joke, it's, you know, I'm on board.
I wonder if when he looks at him though, he can't always put two and two together because he doesn't see that when they're sat side by side it's pointing at it, but when he looks at him, he's like, that's just a funny t-shirt. Some of the human that Simon is kind of known for is sometimes a little below the belt. Penguin Period Man being one example, or I rented this hooker t-shirt as another. So I think Alan hasn't seen that it is actually about him. Although, is Simon kind of having a bit of a subtle dig at him, do we think?
Oh, I think so.
I would think so.
Fine.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, there's definitely a bit of animosity.
Yeah.
So just my question to the group for musical Bobs. So just to recap, you've got Bob Marley, Bob Geldof, Bob Dylan, Bob Seger, Bob the Builder. Which Bob would you want to get stuck in a lift with? Which Bob would you like to invite round for dinner? Which Bob would you like to record a podcast with? And which Bob would you like to get round to work on a loft extension?
Oh my goodness.
Oh, Builder loft extension.
Yeah.
I feel like we can cover that one off.
Yeah. I mean, also, as you've used the term stuck in a lift, I think I'd have Bob the Builder there as well.
Yep.
Yeah, exactly.
I'll accept.
That's fine.
I think you probably
that was
want,
fine, we'll move on.
Well, you'd invite Bob the Builder around for dinner because he's done so much work for you as well. So thank you.
What have we got then left? Maybe record a podcast with him about all the great things he's been doing with you.
It's Bob the Builder.
Okay, great. He's the winner.
He swept the board.
This is where
that's another one of the jobs he's done.
I think this is the moment we get the only normal time check of this series. Alan just says the time is 11:02.
Oh, he's given up.
Yeah, it's not very exciting, but it does happen.
A 10-year-old who's doing a project on slavery at school has drawn a picture of Alan, which I think we can see here. There we go. You can tell that Alan was surprised by this, didn't know it was being sent in. It's effectively, for the benefit of listeners, it's a blacked-up Alan in chains.
But, and that's fine.
But he immediately has to make clear that the tragedy, his words, is that he probably would have been a slave owner. He needs to make that very clear.
Yeah.
One of the nice ones.
One of the nice ones, Alan's words, not ours, that would have given them an extended break.
He essentially is a slave owner when you think about poor old Lynn on her £9,500. Because when he says, before you know it, they're wanting days off because they're depressed, so I thought that's a bit like when he was annoyed about her flexi grief when her mother died.
Yeah. Doesn't he say, and before you know it, they're mobilising?
Also, he's complaining about these fictitious slave that he's kept on after abolition. They want days off because they're depressed. I mean, I thought given that Alan has a spell himself where he's clinically fed up, you'd think he'd have more sympathy, but I think he does struggle to admit to himself that he's got mental health issues, isn't he?
Yeah.
Has no empathy for other people either.
Yeah, he would be the worst slave owner. The fact that he kind of cites a glass of water as making him one of the good ones is kind of tantamount. Tells you all you need to know. No mention of a meaningful wage, shelter, or dignity.
Also, just to quickly dive back into Outfit Watch, I mean, Alan's shirt here, while obviously quite bad, I think is probably one of the least offensive shirts he's got.
Yeah.
Although it does look like something you might find at a snooker match or in Michael McIntyre's audience. There's a new regular feature we've not heard before, Burke of the Week, and this is quite revelatory, isn't it?
Well, normally it goes to Nigel Bevan, who's head of planning at Norwich City Council. He would have got it for a second week, but shock, it's
Alan Partridge.
Yeah. Mm.
Quick question, if we had a regular Burke of the Week feature in the podcast, if we had to...
I cannot believe you've said that.
Always Nick. So Alan,
you can give a different answer.
What? You put me on the spot? Alan is the Burke of the week. He says, I just took a few people for granted and acted like a Burke, to be fair. I just wanted to say soz. No, a full sorry, actually. That's as close to a proper apology as we've ever had from Alan.
Yeah.
And this is, and kind of it becomes clear later, but this is all around Angela and what's kind of going on with his relationship with Angela. So I guess he sees it as a gesture that it's a nice thing to do to say that on the radio, but I wonder if actually the nicer thing to do would just be to call Angela and just say, I'm sorry for whatever I did.
I mean, but that would be the logical choice.
He said soz on the radio and then had to upgrade it after he said it out loud.
And so, because Simon's genuinely quite worried about him at this point, he asks him if he's okay because Simon is aware he hasn't seen Angela for a while. And Alan's response is just go, forget about it.
Just tussles his hair.
So that's happened in a previous episode in this series. That seems to be Alan's default phrase to avoid any kind of emotive connection. Forget about it.
Alan's tapping the desk at this point. He's invented a new drum beat. And he's in deep denial. Angela has sent someone in to ask for the keys to the caravan from Alan. That's how we know this is serious.
And he mustn't be home when she picks them up.
Exactly.
They were very clear on that.
To which he says, that's ridiculous. We fucking love each other.
Did anyone notice that he kind of starts to dribble a little bit here as well?
Yes.
There's literally
I didn't plot that.
Yeah, he literally, a bit of dribble comes out of his mouth as well. I can only assume intentional, otherwise I'm sure they would have redone the scene.
Did you spot what he puts this dispute with Angela down to?
He's been texting Melanie.
Oh, whoa. No. What he puts it down to is her gluten-free diet.
Yeah, did anyone make a note of who the producer is in this scene as well?
No.
It's Raquel Cassidy, who I always just think of. It's Susan from Teachers, basically.
Okay.
Also in Lead Balloon, Downton, Silent Witness, Jonathan Creek, Midsummer Murders. Ooh. All the essential
Doctors.
TV shows there. I don't have that on my list, but there were quite a lot of things on
that. We'll assume it was on there.
Yeah, probably.
As well.
I mean, who hasn't been on Doctors at this point?
So we get to the root of the problem, which is that Melanie, the PA, and Alan have been getting friendly. Would anyone like to go into this in a little more detail?
Well, first off, this is on a work trip to the swimming pool. How many places have you worked at where you go on a trip to the swimming pool with each other?
He's organised that, hasn't he?
Yeah. And they're the only two that have gone, I assume.
So, yeah, he says that he started chatting to Melanie about his pool gloves.
Yeah.
Which is a detail that we'll come back to later.
I must admit I haven't really done any deep research, but what are pool gloves? Is it like a Veruca sock?
I think pretty much.
For your hands.
For there is some kind of ailment, which means he needs to wear gloves in the pool.
But yeah, that's referred to across several bits.
Yeah. We've seen him in a pool before, though, and he's not been wearing gloves. Remember, the watch was waterproof. He wasn't wearing gloves.
That's very true.
That was in Gibbon's phase one, so that's a difference.
And, the ailment could come in later life.
Yeah.
Very true. But let's get to the heart of the matter, which is that basically Melanie, the PA, has sent Alan what doesn't seem like a salacious picture. I think it's just she wasn't trying to elicit a response from him, but she certainly got one. He texted her back saying, I'd like to play your bum like the bongos, and that is why Angela's so angry.
Well, he showed it to Angela.
And showed it straight away.
Yeah.
There is quite a major point to discuss here, that Alan refers to the fact that he's living in a caravan.
I didn't even really clock that.
No. So him and Angela live in a caravan.
We do see an Alpha Papa when they're towing the caravan.
Yeah.
I just assumed it was a holiday caravan.
Well, he says they're living in a caravan, so it's quite interesting.
I missed that.
He's got that thing
he is told to leave the keys on the kitchen table.
I think
he parks his caravan outside.
They're those people.
For some lovemaking.
You've got that kind of thing where, when he was getting the house made in I'm Alan Partridge Series 2, and when the house is finished, he put everything in one room set up like the static home as well.
Yeah, true.
Because we do know in Alpha Papa he was actually living in quite a big house, so has he downgraded again, basically, because he loves that static home feel? I think that's what he's gone for.
He realises that he has to go further than just saying soz, sorry, full sorry. He gives her a dedication, to which he says, life's a bit crummy without you, love your loads, and basically you complete me. They've nailed the sort of the middle-aged man that's a bit scared to admit his feelings here, haven't they? The message is heartfelt, the delivery is bullshit.
He probably does mean it, he just can't really articulate it in the right way, which is not necessarily his fault, to be fair.
And he does a lovely bit here where he's basically narrating along to the dedication he plays.
I was going to say, I've got kind of half narrating, half singing, it's just a bit of a mess, isn't it?
Yeah, so the song is Hard to Say I'm Sorry by Chicago, isn't it?
Yeah. It's a good song, though, to be fair.
It is a great song. Yeah.
But there's a point where he's like, and this is the key point before they start singing, I just want you to stay. And then he's crying. And they cut to another studio where you can only hear his isolated vocal on its own, which I thought was
a lovely. Is it time for the phone call?
I thought you meant a phone in, but his phone call.
Yes. Oh, yes.
I think we should do that.
So he eventually gets Angela on the phone, doesn't he? and it escalates and escalates, but I believe we've got a bit of audio about the culmination
probably,
of this call.
It's probably just worth, I think we'd all agree this is probably the pivotal piece of audio from the entire series. So what's happening, Alan's off screen on the phone to Angela at this point. So the implication is he's phoned her to try and work out some kind of apology. She's not having it. So all you've got to look at during this time is Psychic Simon's facial reaction.
Yeah, and I think it's important to note that Alan handles it with maturity, calm, confident, and just deals with the situation.
It's absolutely fine.
Having used the well-trodden line, our love is stronger than carbon fibre.
What could possibly go wrong after an opener like that?
Before we play the culmination of this call, I do just want to say that this audio snippet does contain scenes that some listeners may find distressing.
Like I said, he handled it calm, confident,
that's so good.
Mature.
That's incredible. Did anybody make a note how many please those are there in that call?
There are eight.
Wow.
Yeah,
excessive. Also thought please though is one of those phrases like, oh, don't bother mate, that belongs in playgrounds only.
Yeah, it's definitely not right for a phone call to your lover, though we're trying to patch things up, is it?
Very
it's
strange.
Not quite appropriate.
Alan then re-enters, pretending to be on the phone to someone called Gustav. was that genuinely the first name that came to mind?
Yeah, exactly. That's hilarious. He says to Simon, Gustav, he's just some genuine friend of mine. Very believable.
By saying genuine, it does make it plausible, and Simon won't question it any further.
Yeah.
Oh, it's genuine. Fine.
Angela called back. She's taking the caravan and the dog, Freddie. Another meaningful dog of Alan's. We've been wrong on the podcast before. We said Alan's relationship with dogs was ambivalent. I don't think it is. They are very much companions to him throughout his life.
But he's not anywhere to be found. Alan suggests he might have gone for a walk or gone to the cinema. Either of those options.
It's very believable.
Yeah, exactly.
And I mean, it's astounding how Alan goes from desperation to save the relationship to bitterness that he's decided that it can't be salvaged.
Yeah, my note here was I think he takes it past the point of no return on this.
Is this when he delivers the what I would describe as the ultimate mic drop?
Yes, go with it.
He says, "Yeah, Angela, your new business venture. Yeah, everyone thinks it's shit, including your sister.
Bye." And then he starts drumming again, doesn't he? Yeah. Nervous tension.
Yeah. I think he doesn't know if he's, you know, he probably realises he has gone a bit too far. He's pushed it over the limit. This is the point of no return.
He's absolutely fucked it by this point.
Yeah.
He imagines something that Freddy the dog might have said to him about always being his friend.
Oh, this is teary. Have you got this?
Yeah, his voice cracks when he's talking about him as well, doesn't he?
And then, but then when Alan goes to hug Freddy, he's already over by the bins eating some pâté.
He says the dog looked at him and said, "You're better than this, Alan. Whatever happens, I'll be your friend." But yeah, then Simon said, "Did you hug the dog at that point?" And he says, "No, he was over by the bins eating pâté."
Alan's struggling to talk with a blocked nose now because he's become so teary. Ruth emails in, he's feeling a bit down waiting for the results of a scan, but this is very much about Alan's problems.
So he goes on to list the good things in his life, right? So they are no mortgage, two cars, fairly fit, can swim well.
No mention of his kids there, though. No mention of kids.
Fernando and Denise don't look at this.
Also, can swim well. Didn't we see him in Scissored Isle failing to tread water for about 2 minutes?
In his mind, he can swim. He clearly can't.
And is it Simon then calls him Jangallen Unchained?
Yes, a free man. He then tells Ruth, who's waiting for the results of a scan, to cheer up, but I think he's really talking to himself.
Absolutely. Does the policeman arrive in the next scene?
Yes, he does.
Yeah. I've got on the screen behind us here.
Yeah, so when I first watched this, I thought maybe the police had arrived at the studio because perhaps he'd been harassing Angela and there was going to be some kind of restraining order situation. So I quite like the way this plays out. So obviously you can't hear the conversation that's happening in the studio. So the policeman has come because Alan's obviously got Freddy the dog hidden under the desk. So the policeman takes him away. Freddy looking quite sad and bewildered there. Alan is left with this squeaky chicken toy and his head in his hands. Very moving.
Yeah. But is Freddy being used as bait to try and get Angela back, or do we just think that he is sad?
Well, she's
Freddy.
Got him back now, so
he's
that over. Hasn't worked.
It's done. Yeah, fair enough.
There's a change of mood in the next scene. Lots of cheering and 11 young people with Alan. As we already know, because we've covered the special that follows this Scissored Isle, we can recognise this is the scene that sets up that special, and he's basically about to slag off one of those kids and later build an entire programme around that fact.
Yep.
He says, I'm sure we're breaking all kinds of fire regs, but who gives a flip? I'm joined by a bevy of teenagers.
Yeah, so he's trying to use what he thinks. I mean, he's wrong, but he thinks it's cool language to try and impress the kids. So things like who gives a flip. He's using hand gestures like this, and he's using words like squares and what's the diff, things like that.
We've seen him skin. Yeah, it's like the previous episode where instead of high fives, he refers to them as let's do slap hands.
Yep.
Yeah. And using words like ting, which he doesn't have any place to say.
Also to try and impress the teenagers, he says, if anyone wants any Annie Lennox cassettes, I'm good for it. Yeah. And then he follows it up with, oh, actually, you're all Robbie Williams.
And someone just goes,
like, who? So he's absolutely clueless as to what young people actually like.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
He says, a lot of you guys get it in the neck from the squares out there, but you guys are pretty diff.
Diff? Yeah.
Come on.
It's ridiculous. So I also, obviously the thing about this is each episode has quite a short title that normally refers to something that happened. So it took me a while to work out, like, why is this part of the episode called Grundy? But obviously, this is kind of them trying to do their version of the infamous Bill Grundy Sex Pistols interview in 1976. So what happened there? Grundy lost complete control of the interview. There was a barrage of swear words that went out live at 6 p.m. He was suspended, and ultimately it began the downward spiral of his career. But I thought also what's quite interesting, I feel like they've done this Bill Grundy moment in other Partridge, in Know Me, Knowing You, when you had the Shona McGough band around him. It was rock and roll, let's all have a pair. But yeah, let's get back to the teenagers. So I think there's a lot to discuss about what happens with Marv.
Well, and also the Norwich Fire Service have emailed in at this point saying that some people do need to leave the room. I was just thinking, the fact that the Norwich Fire Service were streaming this and needed to email in to tell people to leave the room is, you know, staggering in and of itself.
That's the Fire Service and Edmunds that are keenly watching everything that happens in the show.
Just media monitoring him.
Possibly the only viewers.
Yeah. And people are very keen to leave at this point as well. It's not a problem. People are fine to go, and they
do. To the point where someone else says, can I leave? He's like, no, that's enough. That's not losable.
His comment about Greenbelt Land sparks a karate argument between two youths, diffused by Alan talking about how he manages kids' kickback by taking a hold all of CDs to the countryside.
It just doesn't mean anything, does it?
But it's nonsense. Yeah. But then, is it Marv then?
I thought it was Marv.
Well, whoever it is, he bars. He makes a barring noise. Suddenly it's deadly serious.
Yes. Yeah, Alan absolutely flips. He calls him a sheep shagger, implying that Alan's girlfriend is a sheep, which puts him over the edge.
Did you think that it's the recency of his split with Angela that has made him really go off the deep end here?
Absolutely. Yes, absolutely. Yeah.
They insult his girlfriend, and then he realises
he's at a tipping point already when the kids are in there.
He does kind of say at the beginning, though, you know, don't worry, it's cool. Like, he gives them a second chance, but to be fair, he doesn't rise above it because this kid is probably, you know...
The best thing is, the bit that really made him flip, the straw that broke the camel's back, is the bit of paper being thrown at the back of his head, and that was a different kid as well.
That doesn't matter though.
He's livid.
Yeah, I've checked my notes. He's like, Mark.
Okay, fine.
He then dives into a very graphic and prolonged description of how perhaps Mark is the sheep shagger, including the phrase tenderly kissing them, playing with their teats, and ending with your hot balls pushed up against its willy back.
It goes on quite a bit, doesn't it? So I've got a couple of notes about this that are probably worth going into, because there's quite a large continuity bombshell, which we know we're fans of continuity. So there's a kid directly behind Alan that gets his phone out and starts filming. And kind of like pulls a bit of a excited face. In the next shot, there is no phone in his hand. In the next shot, he pulls his phone out again and starts filming. So I thought maybe the way they filmed this, perhaps Coogan kind of improvised bits of it and they just stitched a few different takes together. So that's why that happens.
There's definitely a few shots in the series where you cut from one Psychic Simon facial expression to another without any
line up.
Spoils the conceit of the webcam show a tiny bit.
I've got some sheep shagger intel, if you want to get into that.
I mean,
it's what the people have come here for.
Yeah, I think that's what everyone
wants.
You can
cover this.
So Alan's accused of being a sheep shagger. In a court case in Britain, the use of the term directed at a Welsh person was ruled to be a racially aggravating factor in a disorderly conduct offence. So it can be a legal offence. Mm. So as we know, in the UK, it's used to refer to the Welsh. In South Africa, it's used to refer to Australians. Also, popping over to New Zealand, in a television advert for Toyota, the New Zealand Advertising Standards Authority determined the phrase sheep shagger was not viewed as offensive to the majority majority of New Zealanders. A Wellington resident, Donald McDonald, surely that's not a real name, and others complained the term sheepshagger in the advert was offensive. In accordance with the majority view, the authority did not uphold the complaints. Mr. McDonald, a repeat complainer to the Broadcasting Sands Authority, has been warned by them to stop. They would stop listening to him if he made any more trivial complaints. Yeah. So Donald there. Yeah. Donald McDonald.
Say what you like about our podcast, but don't say we don't cover the important
things. We've done the research. We really have.
So yeah, Alan has talked himself into a corner with this hot balls, woolly back scenario. The phone rings, he says, it's probably for me. Yeah. He knows the writing's on there. It's Craig, isn't it? The station manager calls him to admonish him for this. And then shortly after that, we're back in the studio and Simon's manning the desk alone. I thought they've done that for narrative purposes to make it look like Alan has been kicked off because of this sheepshagger business. I thought, could it be the end of Alan at North Norfolk Digital?
That was my assumption at this point, that probably Alan's not going to come back from such a offence.
And we're in the last episode and of the series.
That's how the second part of Snow opens, right? You've just got Simon solo in the studio. I think that's exactly what you're led to believe, isn't it? Until Alan appears behind him.
In quite a sinister kind of way, sort of stands behind him.
Yeah, looming is the word I'd use. And also it's right after Simon's managed to finally sneak in saying the word aha online because he's just played Take On Me. He's in trouble. Is that catchphrase?
Is this also where he back announces Chris de Burgh? I always think of as Irish for Chris de Burgh. Good to get Burke in there again, I think.
I was slightly disappointed that Simon used the aha. Kind of didn't expect him to emulate and look up to Alan. I think he'd more want to carve out his own brand.
Yeah, I think that's actually quite a good point. But there is a good payoff to it within this episode.
True.
So, there's a value to it, definitely.
Today's phone-in is, we want to know where you grab a coffee, sponsored by Costa. Now, I thought, this is ill-advised, isn't it? Surely...
I don't think this goes the way that Costa wanted it.
No. My prediction here was, surely this is either 10 people calling in to just say Costa, which is a terrible phone-in, or it's people recommending the sponsor's rivals.
So Simon's called this the caffeinated quandary, which... Alan really enjoys, but he does also use the phrase "grab a coffee," which has been used in the previous series when Alan says he thinks he's a doctor in ER.
Yeah,
he's quite aggravated about that term. I also quite like. There's lots of parts of this episode where like the heads are cut off, like you can see there. So it adds that kind of webcam realism. It's not necessarily framed perfectly. Some things are kind of happening slightly off screen.
It turns out Alan is still in charge. He's just late and he's been relatively polite about it so far. But then it does turn out, doesn't it, that he's been off for a month with Chris standing in. Is that right?
Well, yeah, he's been off for a month and the revelation that the show has been renamed to Morning Matters.
Shocking. But it turns out further, he's not just been off for a month, he has been suspended. Mm-hmm. So action has been taken due to what we've seen previously.
Did you notice the parallel that he draws between horses and Anthea Turner that they have in common?
No.
Apparently they both don't like you walking around the back of them.
They will kick. They will kick.
And we also learn there's a skeleton staff in the studio. Alan is going to find his talents stretched to the limit.
It's basically been snowing, isn't it? People can't get in, but Alan's prepared to do what he needs to do to cover the show on his
first
day back.
It was much easier to figure out why this part of the episode was called Snow, I'll be honest.
And there's a second reference. He's referred to Bernard Matthews on this show before, but he says Bernard Matthews used to breed his turkeys without them. This is wings.
So this is Alan's dream, right? He's asked to basically host every show on the station for the rest of the day.
That's a really good point. Although there is one slight hiccup here that he does have a doctor's appointment at 3, but he says, I'll just swim with the gloves on for a few more days. That's important.
Yes.
We'll come back to that.
It's another contagious Alan disease. There's always injections of quees wherever you can get them with him as well, isn't there? There's a good example of that. There's also another problem with him covering all the shows, which is that he finds out that a young lady called Jeanette is going to be putting the calls through, and we soon learn that she is terrible.
She tries her best.
Alan does ask, is she part of a government programme? So this is already a bit worrying.
And then further revelations, I think, that Psychic Simon can't do the afternoon shows because he's got a job interview.
I kind of felt like happy and proud for Simon that he was able to get out of what is, you know, almost a prison sentence of working with Alan. I wanted him to kind of do well and potentially move on from Alan.
But then have you ever told a current employer that you've got a job interview somewhere else?
No.
As Simon describes it, he says, it's not a radio station, it's a website. It's a new venture, quite a young company. They aggregate content, there's a free breakfast, it's quite democratic, and they have big team meetings where everyone can chip in, so everyone feels like they have a stake in it. I've put underneath that, the subtext is obvious, the impact is explosive.
Yeah, so, I mean, I would assume it's supposed to be some kind of BuzzFeed lab type, type place that he's going to. I did also know you have the bit earlier when Alan is talking to Sarah and he's saying he's got so many ideas, pop. So whenever he's talking about Craig and getting ideas to Craig, there's always a bit like, I'm fizzy with ideas, he's a one-man soda stream. I don't know why that's always affiliated with his Craig conversations. And as always with Tim Key, it's pure, whilst Alan's having that conversation with Sarah about all the great ideas and the fact that he came in, even though he smashed his wing mirror, the facial acting is incredible.
Brilliant. Alan's reaction to Simon going for this job interview, he's obviously irked, but trying not to be. He focuses on the free breakfast that was mentioned. Yeah. He says, so it amuses me what lures young people these days, which I thought was a rank hypocrisy from a man who used to bring a large plate to a breakfast in order to take extra food.
And he has, of course, gone straight on air to reveal that there's been skullduggery as well, until Simon corrects him that it's not about a rival radio station.
At what point do we see Alan choking on his gum?
It's around now.
Alan chokes on his gum. This is, he kind of
then
like,
what happens?
Well, he sort of laughs at his own joke and kind of like makes a kind of like nasal snort. His gum goes in and then sees the only way to kind of save himself by giving himself the Heimlich manoeuvre, which he successfully does. He spits out his gum, but then immediately turns to Simon and says, do you not know the Heimlich manoeuvre? Which Simon says, yeah.
Unbelievable.
Wow.
Yeah, that's it.
Wow. I thought this is quite good, although you do notice through this episode they're using all the comic potential as if Simon's already got another job, but obviously just an interview, as we come to find out later. Alan claims that he's a changed man since being dumped, which he dubs Meltdown Monday. He says that's what was used on the internal memos, wasn't it?
Nope.
Simon corrects him. No, it was
Mental Monday. So yeah, I think Alan
on the internal memos as well. So inside the company, people were referring to this as this Mental Monday, which is absolutely brilliant.
Yeah,
Alan says that if Psychic Simon had used his catchphrase before Meltdown Monday, Alan would have taped over the security cameras, kicked in his car door, and anonymously sent a skip to his mum's house.
So I think Alan's kind of furious with him for two reasons now, isn't he? It's about the job interview and the use of aha.
Yes.
But he's trying his best to appear calm. I don't think it's really working. I'm not buying it.
Another reference to their favourite local live music venue and pub, as Simon's sort of saying goodbye, even though there's any other job interview.
Well, yeah, he's kind of assuming that he's got this job, isn't he?
Yeah, because he even goes on to, he starts like trying to recall the good times. He's like, oh, remember, because he mentions when he was riding the exercise bike, which is in the very first episode of Mid Morning Matter Series 1. Alan just ignores him, puts headphones on, and starts a link.
Yeah, so he says to Alan, see you at the Boxley Wheat Sheaf for the pub quiz. The Boxley Wheat Sheaf comes up quite a lot. We investigated whether that was real, didn't we? It's fictitious,
it's
sadly.
Yeah, it's not real.
So you have to go somewhere else to see Will of the Wisp.
That's a shame. That Norwich hotspot.
So in terms of the overriding narrative here, I think we're gearing up for a big end of series sort of problem. Alan's lost his girlfriend, his sidekick, and obviously any residual respect his colleagues had for him, vis-a-vis Mental Monday.
Yeah.
But he tries to continue unhindered by Simon, but he's trying too hard. He's there going, we're having a great time.
Yeah, he's somewhat overcompensating, I think it's fair to say.
Are we coming up to the best introduction to a song of all time, as far as Alan goes? Go on then.
I thought you were referring to something else. I was talking about Leonard in Yaxham.
Oh, I'm talking about This Is What Bananas Wear in Battle. It's Bananarama. Come on, that's good.
That is good.
Alan is responsible for some radio shit, but there are nuggets of gold in
that
there.
That is good.
Go on.
Well, Leonard in Yaxham is calling.
What's he calling about?
Well, he's calling about the fact he likes black coffee. That in and of itself is fine until we learn that Leonard is...
Oh, actually, you're skipping ahead ever so slightly. There are a few other bits.
Please.
You've got two whole shows that he's doing before this, because that's when he's covering for Dave Clifton. So before this, he's covering for Beverly Backton. And this is when we get to learn how awful Jeanette is at transferring calls. So he has to go out of the studio shouting, you need to press transfer at Jeanette. And they also go back to the phone-in for the Costa phone-in. And actually, the first call he takes is Susan in Herringfleet, and she actually just goes on to say that she missed Alan Boone on air. It's actually quite a nice moment for him.
And we find out some of the things he's been up to while he's been suspended. He went on a Loch Lomond watercolour break. So a little tip for you, Susan, don't take up watercolour painting. Yeah. It's just not very good.
Alan wants to make it very clear that no one made him take time off. this was his decision completely. Bollocks.
Absolutely wasn't. But it might be one of those sort of things where it's kind of like, you know, we're going to suggest you take some time off. If you don't, we will enforce it, but we can make it your choice. Jump
but we
before
do also know he's an unreliable narrator.
Correct.
So yeah, there was also an internal memo called Mental Monday.
I
need to remember that.
So before we get to Leonard and Yaxham, which I am keen to get to, Alan is also reading the news. And basically the way this works when Alan is reading the news, it's you get the news story followed with Alan's opinion and jokes bolted onto the end of each story. So he calls suspicion on a dog walker that found a dead body. He blames Banksy for encouraging kids to vandalise. And then he goes on to read new guidelines for on-air conduct, which is clearly an internal memo that he's not supposed to read out.
No, I think actually he was supposed to read that. I think that basically what's happened is he's read the news, and that one of the news pieces is that there are new guidelines brought in across the country because of his suspension. So he ends up basically reading a news piece about his own mistakes.
See, I thought it was more the gag like maintaining a workplace, like in the first series when he does that.
Oh yeah, but no, I think it's a legitimate piece of news. Basically, there's new Ofcom or whatever the
joke
regulations.
Due to Mental Monday.
He's now covering for Dave Clifton.
Now he's in for Dave Clifton.
Whose tagline? I like Dave Clifton's tagline because it makes no sense at all. Come on, Norfolk, let's go home.
So it's Leonard and Yaxham, and what's funny about
it? Oh, you're claiming.
I don't think I can do it.
I can't do it for a second time. Go on.
Leonard and Yaxham, it's revealed that he has a black coffee on the way to school, but then it's revealed that he's five.
Yeah. I'd just quite like to go through the script for this because I absolutely love this bit. So Alan says, does mummy know you do this? Leonard says, your mummy or my mummy. Then says, where's sidekick Simon? I thought surely a five-year-old wouldn't be asking where's sidekick Simon. Alan says he's gone to work at a website that aggregates content.
Absolutely.
Meaningless. Leonard then says, are you sad or happy? Alan, happy, thanks for your call. I just love the way it progresses through so many gags so quickly. That's brilliant.
Yeah, the next call about where people like to get their coffee, somebody says, I like to sit outside my ex-wife's house, and then immediately that caller's cut off. Now, the obvious thing here is that Jeanette is terrible and cuts the callers off, but my outsider theory is that the caller is Jeanette's ex-husband, and that one was deliberate.
Wow, that's a controversial thing.
Yeah, it's possible. I mean, we just don't know enough about Jeanette.
We really don't. We don't know if she's part of a government scheme or not.
Exactly. We should also bear in mind that at this point, this Costa Coffee phone-in has been running through three different shows. Does that ever happen?
I think in regional radio it definitely could.
Yeah.
But also, no one's drinking at Costa. It's really not working out for them.
Fair enough.
I did also dislike with the Leonard and Yaxham call that originally he was a bit worried about why is this five-year-old child drinking black coffee on the way to school every morning. But because they started asking where's psychic Simon, just wrap up the call and move on. Everything's probably fine.
Is it time to talk about Alan's perfect woman? Well, what we presume is Alan's perfect woman.
Well, yes. Yeah, so what's happened here? The phone system has gone down completely. So you have Alan just shouting off into the distance, I can't get any callers. Hello, anyone? So the implication is the phone system has failed, and also Jeanette is no longer even responding to him.
Yep.
We'll find out more about that later.
Yep, we know why.
So you've now basically got a series of short sequences of Alan kind of what I'd say shit-chatting because there are no callers. Mm.
It's quite nice because it's sort of it's almost like a, well, I mean, you wouldn't pick it as your show reel, but it's almost like it's just a little vignettes of Alan broadcasting. It's what we the one constant that's run through everything he's ever done. He's always been a broadcaster, and this is kind of going back to basics.
Well, because dead air is a crime.
Dead air is a crime.
He's nailed that.
So can you remember who he wants his dream woman, the brain?
It's Vorderman.
It's Vorderman. Body?
It's Vorderman.
Face?
Bradbury.
Hands?
Nanette Newman. Newman.
Legs?
Jessica Ennis.
Backside?
A Strictly Come Dancer.
Not specified.
Stitch it all together and Bob's your uncle.
And there's some lovely... I mean, that one, obviously, you don't see anyone ask him who's your perfect woman. You have to guess that's what he's saying from the reply. Yeah. There's a lot of those. Like, it cuts into the next scene and he says, traffic lights, I'm going to stick my neck out here and say that Amber is obsolete.
But obviously, that's the thing. No one's asking these things. He's literally just, what's the next topic of conversation I'm just going to chat about for half an hour to fill the airtime?
He's also wondering if he's done Celebrity Big Head yet.
Yeah, I mean, at this point, I thought he does need Simon to keep him on track. He's starting to lose his train of thought a little bit.
I don't know if we've had Alan's socks on the screen behind us yet. So there's a little outtake from... there you go, they're circled there, you can't miss them. There's a little outtake from these scenes where they were filming and Coogan just had normal black socks on. So he kind of stops and says, no, I need the Alan socks. So I quite like there's that level of attention to detail that any item of clothing you see really ties up with what you'd expect Alan to be wearing.
He then describes the Mary Celeste, a boat drifting at sea. I wondered, is that just a metaphor for how this show's going now?
Oh, it definitely could be.
Yeah. He's become very rudderless, but behind him, a figure appears in a duffel coat. Now, I didn't know where this was going initially, did you?
Well, I don't really understand what the duffel coat... Like,
Well, obviously, it's because it's snowing. It's very cold outside.
But yeah, but
it also looks a bit like the character from Ghost Stories, I thought.
Yeah, or Kenny being from South Park.
Yeah, in a menacing sort of way. But yeah, basically at this point, because you've also had, after you've had all those vignettes, Alan was kind of just ends up sitting on his own opposite a darkened studio, so he looks very lost. It's kind of like he's lost all his validation because he doesn't have any listeners. That's basically what it's come down to. Mm. But yeah, Simon is back, so what's going to happen?
He saw this coming, I think. So without even turning around, he says to Simon, "So you didn't get the job." It turns out it's because Simon lied on his CV. And then there's a bit of affinity with Alan again. He's not too hard on him.
No, because Alan has also lied on his CV saying that he's a brown belt in judo.
So he's welcome back, but I did predict, pausing the recording at this point, that he's about to put him in his place. But Simon knows how to reboot the broken cooler system.
This is where, like, they are the yin and the yang for each other. Like, you know, Alan isn't able to properly work the desk, which is, you know, staggering in its own right, but let's just take that as read. Simon comes in and is able to fix the desk, restart it, the calls come through again. So actually, as much as Alan would never admit it, without Simon there, he is pretty useless and the show wouldn't properly function.
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing. I think probably neither of them would admit it, but they actually do make quite a good team without realising it. Yeah.
And then they basically end the entire series with the phone-in that is also replicated in Alpha Papa, isn't
it? It's very similar, isn't it? King and Carr.
So that's in Mid-Morning Matters Series 1, so their story is kind of come full circle, which I thought was quite nice.
Can we also quickly cover why Jeanette isn't transferring any of the calls?
Yeah, she's outside playing in the snow.
Yeah.
I'm glad we came back to that.
Someone suggests Henry V in a Renault Megane Scenic, to which they say, "You think he'd drive French after Agincourt? Hello."
Bonjour.
And then it's Trevor in Reedham, Henry V again, Land Rover Defender, long wheelbase, specced up to the nines, which Alan replies to, "Okay, someone taking it seriously."
Yeah. That's the type of cooler he likes, isn't it?
There's a lovely back and forth where someone suggests a Porsche, don't they? Say, a Porsche, my kingdom for a Porsche. Alan likes that so much, he says, "Slap a hand." Simon says, "Testify," and then Alan has to spoil it. That's great banter. I mean, it's not as good as it was, but it's still very good. And then we get a bit that sort of betrays the webcam idea of Mid-Morning Matters in that it buffers, it stutters, and eventually it fades to black, which obviously a webcam would never do. But,
although actually it ends on them kind of all, they were about to together to say aha, and then it freezes. Yeah.
So again, you've also come full circle within the episode itself that they've been through so much that Alan is going to give Simon that moment. They're going to combine and do an aha together when the webcam starts buffering, so you actually never actually see it play out in full.
The thing is, I think that's a nice finish. It's a nice touch, but I think the impact of that is potentially diminished by Psychic Simon doing the aha early. I think it would have been nice to not have that and then have this as the ending. I think that would have been
his first aha. And then the webcam stutters and freezes with them in a Jesus pose. There you go. Alan has there's been a telltale red pen on the side of the screen, which explains the stigmata here as well.
This is the thing. I think there are a couple of theories you can apply to this, because you do have the red pen there, as you can see, but also the fact you do have these consistent references throughout the series, him having to wear the swimming gloves. So actually, is the indication that this is...
Oh, you think they're sores?
Yeah.
Okay.
Somebody did tweet us about this. Suddenly Tim tweeted us, "Been rewatching Mid-Morning Matters Series 2, and I thought the stigmata at the end was a bit silly, but then I realised it actually ties back to the throwaway line earlier. I had a doctor's appointment at 3, but it's fine, I'll just swim in the gloves for a few more days." So I think you can kind of read it both ways, because I didn't notice the red pen straight away.
That did kind of ruin
the theory for me, annoying, to be honest. And also, what's quite interesting, so obviously you've kind of got, this is almost like a Renaissance painting style pose, Alan depicted as Christ, but then the music they play over this is a song called Aphrodite's Child by the Four Horsemen. So I didn't know what that was, so don't worry, Wikipedia helped me out. Aphrodite's Child was a Greek prog rock band formed in 1967, which featured Vangelis Papathanasiou, and Demis Roussos. The track is from their prog rock concept album 666, and it's worth Vangelis, if you've heard of him, because he went on to make famous soundtracks like Blade Runner.
Oh yeah, he's very famous.
And obviously Demis Roussos, also very famous. So it's quite a weird thing. You've got Alan depicted as Christ, but then you've got a song about the coming of the apocalypse. So does that cancel out Alan being the second coming? Perhaps he's not Jesus, but perhaps he's finally a better, more sought-after broadcaster, or at least going to be a bit less better predictor, Simon.
It might be that. He's not a better broadcaster. Two series of Mid-Morning Matters have told us that he's absolutely not.
He's not the Messiah. He's a very naughty boy.
Yeah. So that takes us to the end of this episode. I guess we should cast an eye over the series as a whole.
Just quickly, this episode specifically has 8.4 out of 10, which is the highest.
That's the highest,
it's the highest in the whole series, yeah.
What are everybody's highlights of this series? What are your thoughts?
Well, I mean, I actually would say I think this is my favourite episode because I just like the way that it really pushes some good narrative through. You've got the Angela narrative, the Simon narrative. I think both parts of the episode are very strong, whereas, as I've said, I think some of the other episodes, there are parts, so half episodes, which I think really let them down. And I'm talking about, I didn't really like Jasper, Gangster, or Royal Visit.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, otherwise, consistently strong. I think the jingles are the thing that I would probably call out as some of the highlights. There are some, I mean, not only are they jingles that would never, ever be broadcast on radio, but kind of that's where, you know, so much of the humour is.
Yeah.
Obviously, Alan has kind of recorded all of these things himself. We've talked about the fact that he doesn't have a producer, there's no kind of filter, but that doesn't stop this going out, and the result is just comedy gold. So
if we all had to choose favourite episodes, what would we go for, do we think?
There's one we covered recently where there's a Welsh cook comes in who's very, very sweet right up until the last minute when she basically snaps at Psychic Simon, tells him to be a fucking man. That's my favourite.
Nick, Tom, choose an episode.
My favourite is episode 2, which is Book Club and Dave Clifton, mostly because of the return of Dave Clifton, really.
Nick,
first one probably with Cecil talking about the North Norfolk hunt.
Okay, so we've got quite
easy
even,
for you
even
to say. Yeah.
Do be careful how you say that. And if we had to choose a favourite moment, what would you go for? So for me, it's the 5-year-old child drinking black coffee on the way to school. I just love that bit of script. And probably the phoning about Edmunds being bombed at Hampton Court
Palace. Oh, yeah, that is brilliant.
By Jeanette Cranky.
There are two lines in the Dave Clifton episode that really stand out for me. One is where they're sort of dancing around the fact that his lowest ebb, he pleasured a vagrant. And then he comes in and they say, we've just been talking about your checkered past. He goes, oh, yeah, you're talking about the time I whacked off those tramps.
Plural. That was plural.
Yeah, that was absolutely, absolutely lovely. And also, that's the episode where Alan leads into the next song by saying, this is what I told my wife on her birthday, UB44.
Yeah, that is great.
Excellent.
Is great. Any other favourite moments?
Yep, mine would be Dave Clifton in general, really. It has everything. A story of redemption. It's Alan and Dave becoming friends after being rivals for so many years, and it's wanking off tramps.
It's everything you want. Yeah. And also, is it worth discussing what do we think is better, series 1 or series 2? If we're going to put you on the spot, if you have to choose one.
I think series 2 is better, but I think it builds on the scaffolding of series 1. You couldn't have one without the other.
Yeah.
That's my bet hedging answer.
That's good, actually,
for you.
Yeah. That's fair.
There's not much between them, to be honest. I think they're consistently both really, really strong. So, you know, again, they work hand in hand, the yin and the yang, as we've discussed, almost the metaphor of Simon and Alan. Perfect harmony.
Yeah.
Well, interestingly, according to the rankings on IMDb, Mid-Morning Matters Series 2 is actually the third most popular Partridge, or the highest ranking, sorry, I should
say. That's quite interesting.
Yeah, so it's I'm Alan Partridge Series 1, I'm Alan Partridge Series 2, and then Mid-Morning Matters Series 2.
Yeah, I don't think I disagree with that, to be honest.
Oh, wow.
I would definitely, I think I would choose Series 2 above Series 1, just because I think there is more plot development, so but also it is interesting because it does kind of need multiple viewings to get the best out of it as well. That, like, the quality of the script is so good, but it's like so densely layered with gags and like a really highly nuanced script that it's actually quite hard to keep up sometimes. So if you watch it a few times, you'll definitely hear things that you've missed before.
Well, yeah, I mean, if you think about it, the whole series runtime is, what, probably 3 hours.
Yeah.
We've watched it multiple times, and the sum total of these podcasts is probably going to be close to 5 hours that we've been talking about it.
See, my thing is, for money,
my thing is not much to go into. About 5 hours.
Yeah.
So that brings us pretty much gloriously to the end of the series.
I don't know if anyone else had any points to make about the series overall, because I just think it is that thing, like we kind of said, I think it's really great in terms of character development, because obviously we all know Alan is still a self-obsessed narcissist, you know, whether he's cutting off Simon, he's never talking to Simon about his take on things, what his experiences are, but we do actually see sensitive moments of vulnerability, especially when the narrative with Angela develops, and I also loved like the way Simon is now a fully bedridden part of Alan's universe as well. Like, the show is a proper two-hander, it's about the both of them, and it's kind of like we've said quite a few times now, it's like Simon's Tim Key's facial reactions and responses
are so good.
Are like, you could watch the whole thing just
on
his
face. I think
face,
I did, second
basically.
Time round I did watch mostly watch
so we can recommend
Tim
that to you to watch it like that at home.
Yeah.
And yeah, I just think as a viewer, the show can kind of work on two levels. So even if you were quite a passive Alan fan, you could actually dip in and dip out, and you could probably watch them in any order, and you'd still get a lot of gags. You wouldn't really be missing much because it's quite a quick fire script. But if you're more of a hardcore Alan fan, it does a great job of kind of like layering the narrative strands of characters from previous Alan eras. So it doesn't rely just on, like, you've got Lynn in there, you've got Angela in there, you've got, it refers to moments of Alan Partridge, Alpha Papa, Mid Morning Madness Series 1. So if you know all the previous character history, it just makes it a much richer experience. So what I'm saying is, yeah, it's quite good. Yep.
And the critics agreed. The Independent, The Guardian and The Telegraph are reviews that I sort of looked at, and they all gave it very good reviews. So yeah, it was well received critically as well.
Yeah, it was. Yeah.
Absolutely recommended. So all that's left for this particular segment is for us to play a quick game of BBC One. No, sorry, not BBC One's Would I Lie to You.
Don't say that.
For copyright reasons, it's Would We Lie to You. Who's in charge of this round?
That would be me, closing the series.
So my
Would We Lie to You questions are all on the royals. So I'm going to get my esteemed colleagues to read out three statements. I want our wonderful audience to cheer for the one that they think is the true fact. So I'm going to start with Adam at the end of the table to read the first statement.
The Queen and her husband, Prince Philip, are in fact related. They are third cousins.
Prince Harry once kicked a swan.
Prince William is a big posh sod with plums in his mouth because plums are his favourite fruit.
There you go. So if you think it was... just to recap. Adam at the end, the Queen and her husband Prince Philip are related. Tom Dark with Prince Harry once kicked a swan. And Nick with Prince William and his favourite fruit being plums. So please give us a cheer if you think that the first statement, the Queen and the husband being related, is true. Please give us a cheer if you think it was Prince Harry kicking a swan. Yay! And please give us a cheer if you think Prince William's favourite fruit is plums.
Oh, not much for that one.
Wow, wasn't popular.
I've got a theory that the swan people just wanted it to be.
Yeah. I think so. So what do we think? Do we think it was... I think it was probably Adam. Adam. So please, Adam, can you reveal if your statement was indeed true or false?
I'm delighted to tell you that they are third cousins. You're right.
Well done.
So there you go. Just chaps, reveal
just,
your...
Just prove there's no foul play.
There we go.
Prince Harry, kick a swan.
The final wilty of the series.
That's right. That brings us to the end of this bit. We have covered episode 6 of Mid-Morning Matters.
We've done so much.
You can get in touch with us at thepartridgepod@gmail.com, facebook.com/thepartridgepod, Twitter it's @thepartridgepod, and monkeytennispod on Instagram. So we're going to wrap up this particular segment. Our audience in London, we're going to beg for applause again, and then we'll get on to the very important section of introducing our special guest. So thank you very much.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Monkey tennis?
Yabba dabba doo. Oh,
sorry, I did Jimmy Savile there. Monkey tennis?
This is Midmore Matt.
Let's do slap hands.
Idiotic broth.
Monkey tennis?
Please though!
Pop. Monkey tennis?
You need to press transfer.
I like it, it's a clean kill. Monkey tennis?
We will do that, definitely, yeah.
Okay, does Mummy know you do this?
The time is 10:30.
What a Dilbert. Monkey tennis?
I know it won't smash, Lynn. Just wrap it in bubble wrap.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Hey, everyone. Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.